I'm Chili Dilly, the personality pickle.
Hi, I'm Greg, and I'm a nerd.
You must be kidding, aren't you?
I have never seen anything like this. The worst part has been watching the actual watching of the movie. Some of these were pretty terrible. Welcome back to Box Office Battles Season 2 with Greg and Eric. We are back again for another episode. I'm wearing my glasses tonight, and so I can't get the glare. I hate that. I look like that. Like, look, I look like I'm a cyborg or something. Like,
I feel like there's some people who can get away with that because not everybody that I see wearing glasses looks like a fucking dweeb. But you and I both do with our reflective.
I gotta look down like that.
Nerds.
Welcome back, everybody, to Box Office Battles with Greg and Eric. We are in battle number 2 of the Guilty Pleasures category.
And the shittiest of all the battles, they say.
You think so, huh?
I don't know, because it was number 2.
Oh, okay. I thought you were just taking a pot shot at my movies, because this was in my bracket.
I would never take a dump on your movies.
Nice, because it's number 2.
I'm going to keep doing that.
You're gonna keep taking a dump
Do you just want me to get them all out of the way, all of the excrement
puns? Nice.
That's a shitty way to start the show.
It very, very. We get rolling, you know. Anyway, okay. Today is the battle number 2, episode 2. It is Pop Star, Never Stopping, the number 2 seed, going up against the 1979 disco roller skating comedy action thriller that is known as Roller Boogie. So
I was waiting to hear if you were going to say classic so I could push back a little.
In a way. In a way, it's a classic.
Sure. We'll get into all the ways that it's a classic here shortly.
You won't rain on my parade, sir. You won't.
No! I watched this movie, and I must say that out of all the movies that we have done since season 1 and then into the last 2 that we did for episode 1 of season 2, of all of the movies, this is definitely one of them.
It is. One of the best. Anyway, so 4th of July just came and went. That was actually my birthday. So everybody on Facebook, on the messengers and everything like that, thank you for wishing me a happy birthday. It was a lovely birthday. I went and played golf with my wife and a good friend and his wife. And I had lots of fun. It was very hot here in Ohio. But then we went out to eat and then we enjoyed some just music and just hanging out. It was a good birthday.
Is this your way of bringing up the fact that I didn't text you on your birthday?
Maybe. It could be.
Or the day after.
Or the day after that. But, you know.
I was saving it for tonight. And on behalf of me and the thousands of listeners across the globe, we just wanted to wish you, Greg, a happy birthday on America's birthday. And happy 2025th birthday, America. You know?
Is that what it is? 2020 with?
It is 2025, right?
Oh, okay. I didn't know it was, been around since year 1, so that's good.
Yeah.
Or year 0. Well, you're forgiven for not texting me on my birthday. It's okay.
I figured you were drunk.
I was, actually. Probably more than I have been in a long time, because normally when I'm at a point where I've had too much to drink, I know when to stop. I just, you know, all right, I'm not going to get any drunker. I'm only going to get in trouble. But that night I was like, okay, well, it's my birthday. Why do people do that when it's their birthday? They just throw caution to the wind and act like they would never act. So I got up. I was surprised at how much I drank the night before.
I think to each in their own mind, what they want to convince themselves is okay. And so you just wanted to tie one on, and any excuse to do so was going to be fine. So whether it was your birthday, whether it was the birthday of the United States and America, whatever it was, you were going to be a part of it. And we're proud of you. And we salute your service.
Well,
I think it's like that song, right? It's 5 o'clock somewhere. It's somebody's birthday somewhere. So
right.
I might as well celebrate. And that's what I did on my birthday. And it was a great weekend. We had a good time. I started early. I started drinking at 10 when we started playing golf. And I knew I was in trouble when, you know, we finished and then we went out to eat and I had a few more beers. And then it's somewhere around 9 or 10 o'clock and I've been drinking for 12 hours. And that's when I should have stopped. I should have stopped long before that. It's okay. I survived, but it was a lot of fun. So Mike Florida says, cheers. Cheers to you, Mike. Thanks for being here again in the studio, seeing us at another episode. We're grateful that you're here. And before we get into these wonderful films, The Guilty Pleasures, let's take a look at The Guilty Pleasures bracket. We've only had one battle so far, and that is The Devil Wears Prada lost to the number 5 seed Legally Blonde in a highly contested matchup, but it was very good. So it was a good episode. I enjoyed discussing those two films. So we'll see how tonight goes and whether these two movies will have anything for Eric to enjoy. Pop Star, Never Stop, Never Stopping, and Roller Boogie. We're going to kick it off with Roller Boogie.
Okay. Listen, Greg. Listen, if there's one thing I can say for this movie.
Yes.
Is that it is incredibly well named. And it is not one of those ironic names like the biggest guy in your school. You know, you might nickname him Tiny.
Yep.
Or whatever. Unironically, there is a lot of roller skating in this movie and a lot of boogieing.
Exactly. You get what you paid for.
And it's Love on Wheels. We may need to talk about that's the tagline.
It is.
You know, this is your thing, so I'd really like to hear. Now, we should remind the audience that this is Guilty Pleasures. Now, I have twice now, and I'm not going to fucking repeat myself again, defined what to me a guilty pleasure
yes.
is, where that fits into the fabric of our lives, as Aaron Neville used to sing in the commercials about cotton. But I want to hear if you've got some sort of different light that you want to shed on, you know, how you came to choose your guilty pleasures and where this one fits in. We, the royal we, are all ears.
All right. So, you know, like we talked about last week with guilty pleasure, it's something that you wouldn't think somebody would like Legally Blonde with a strapping macho man like yourself. Liking yes. a chick flick of that nature.
It's the most surprising part.
That's
someone as macho as me.
Yes. Loves Legally Blonde. And so it's similar in this situation with me. It's like the fact that the only people until now, until I aired it out on this show, the only people who really knew that this was one of my favorite films was my mother and my wife. And my mom has passed away, so the secret's safe with her. And my wife knew that I liked this movie because I've played it at home and she's looked at it and gone, oh, okay.
know? Has she ever sat down and watched this with you to learn more about what makes Greg tick?
Well, you know, I did tell her stories about when this came out. I was young. I was really young. This was a staple.
Doubt you were really young. But okay,
come on. It came out in 1979. All right.
Okay. So you were 20.
No, I was not 28 years old, but I was fairly young. Cable had just started, and so they were looking for movies to throw on cable. I think it was like 80 or 81 when I first saw this for the first time on HBO or whatever, Cinemax, and it was just on repeat because they only had these same movies like through the month. They showed over and over again, and I, you know, being... So the way I put it to Christina, to my wife, my lovely wife, Christina, I said, if you watch Roller Boogie and then throw on an episode of anything that was on TV in the 70s, early 80s, Love Boat, Charlie's Angels, Fall Guy, A-Team, the quality is about the same as far as the filming, the acting. That was the entertainment we had at that time, and we were grateful for it.
Did young Greg watch this did it awaken something inside of you? Either sexually or like some sort of long suppressed desire to boogie?
It could have been. I did love music. I loved musical films, you know, not so much musicals, but I liked, like, I was really into like music videos. So I watched it all the time, like when MTV started, Friday Night Videos, I was into all that stuff. And it was just a musical film. So yes, I did enjoy the boogieing. I mean, mm-hmm. you know what you're in for with this movie from the opening credits. And it's the people with the really, really high shorts. You got the dude who is one of my favorites, which is Phones. He has the earbuds or the earphones on the side of his head, which I thought was great. The fact that he did that. And he's got like the big tape recorder. I really think that those need to make a comeback. We don't have
tape
enough.
Tape recorder. That's what you call that?
What do you call it? It was a tape recorder.
Fucking ghetto blaster is what those are called.
But those were bigger. The ghetto blasters you put on your shoulder. This was on his hip. He had a little strap that he put over the shoulder.
That's true.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say ghetto blaster, though.
You did, because you're racist.
That is true. But we're not going to tell anybody what race it is.
Exactly. So you see Phones in the background here, but you can't really make out his headphones and everything. But he's right in the back next to our lead protagonist there doing his boogieing thing. So on that image. Right. But yeah,
if I had one complaint about this movie,
yes.
If gun to my head, Greg, and I had to pick apart one thing.
One thing?
Just the one.
All right.
This movie's an hour and 43 minutes long.
True.
Schindler's List is an hour and 42 minutes long.
Is it?
No, I don't know.
I thought it was like 2 hours.
But Roller Boogie is an hour and 43 minutes. And and part of that is because the first 33 minutes of this movie are just people roller skating.
Exactly. Right from the opening credits. I mean, right from the opening credits.
Yeah, it's down great. down the boulevard.
Yeah.
Near the beach in a... here they are.
Yeah, there's Phones. There's Phones right there on the screen. There he is. This is the lots opening scene, and I just absolutely adore the opening scene of this movie. I mean, look at him. Oh, look at that. Look at that leap.
He jumped.
Look at that leap. Look at them all leap. They're frolicking.
This is a lot of people who are really good at roller skating, all living very closely to one another.
Venice Beach. Man, there's Phones with a C. That's not really a ghetto blaster. He's got like a thing on there. Oh, okay, it's great.
I misspoke.
Oh, this is my favorite. Look at the...
These guys are moving so slow.
Why do you need these sails?
That is like...
Oh, I love it.
These people dance skating are fucking flying by these people.
Why are they making out on a dumpster? That's what I want to know.
You never made out on a dumpster?
I'm not going to tell, but these people definitely did.
I said, and then he gets mad. He gets with a dumpster.
He gets mad. He's got to adjust his shorts. It's roller and it's boogieing. It's roller boogie, and I'm here for it. I mean, I remember as a kid when I watched. I hadn't watched it in maybe since 10 years. I hadn't watched it, but I do watch it from time to time. So I put this on for the first time in a long time, and my wife, we got about halfway through, and she goes, "So is it holding up for you?" And I said,
"Yeah."
I said, "Hell yeah, it is. This is what I signed up for. And look at these. Look at the stunts. I mean, it's awesome."
Yeah. Well, wait until the fucking guy's name is.
CC Conway, Complete Control Conway. Here he comes. No, that's the good guy. This is the good guy. The other guy is CC Conway. Yeah. Look at that. Whoa. Those guys used to be on a TV show called Real People where they would jump barrels and stuff. That was a thing. Here comes CC Conway.
Yeah, whoa, watch out.
The thing is, this takes actually more control to do this on roller skates and not wreck. Well, he wrecks there. But then he gets up to do this little thing that he's doing. Have you ever tried that? It's crazy.
Hey, did we just get booted from Facebook?
Probably. So we'll have to, like, I didn't mute the music all the way, and it was playing that Cher song, so...
You dumb bitch.
So we won't do that anymore. Damn. Well,
you
by Facebook. Jackass. I didn't want them. I didn't want their stream anyway. They're always doing that crap. And yeah, they know we're a movie review show. I'll see if I can get it back, but we'll see.
We have a red exclamation point.
For yeah. Here, while we're live, we might as well do this. The Lasso Entertainment Group has blocked your video. Who? It's not like Universal. It's the people that own the rights to Roller Boogie, apparently. I don't know. So I'm going to go ahead
These guys take this very seriously.
Yeah.
As they should. This movie is serious. All right. So it's an hour and 43 minutes.
It is.
The first 20 and the last 20 all spent roller skating, which leaves you about an hour.
Yes.
To get through, really, and I'm sure that you wouldn't disagree with this, a pretty formulaic plot of twofold, two very common tropes here. Rich people slumming it with the lower castes.
Yes.
They're not in India, but lower class citizens. So that's the first half. And the second is banding together to prevent the unscrupulous land deal. So that part is kind of like the Goonies, right? Where they're trying to save their home. And the slumming it thing we see often in
well, you see it in Karate Kid. In fact, my wife actually made the comparison to this in Karate Kid.
Okay.
So
yeah, Karate Kid's a way better movie than this, but I agree.
Marginally.
You're gonna do this all night, aren't you?
I'm definitely gonna do this all night.
Okay. All right. So let me hold on. Since I know that.
Yes.
Let me try to frame this. So you know how in The Godfather there's a bunch of foreshadowing.
Yes.
I mean, did you feel like there was a lot of that in this one as well?
Oh, for sure. For sure. And it's
we can't talk about this.
The Godfather is only marginally better than Roller Boogie as well. No, okay. So I'll digress. I am being facetious, but there is some foreshadowing.
But only barely.
There is some foreshadowing in Roller Boogie. There is the scene where the dudes are listening to the guy trying to extort money from the guy who owns the roller rink, and he gets up on the vent area and he accidentally presses record on his little tape recorder. That's foreshadowing.
That's not foreshadowing.
Well, it doesn't come into play until much later when he's listening to his tape recorder and he hears the recording. That's foreshadowing.
Well, they got Chekhov's gun. Like, don't put the tape recorder in the room. Well, the tape recorder's not going to be used.
It's kind of foreshadowing, so it is. But, you know, it is. Okay. So, it's not a classic by any stretch.
I will say that the title sequence where it said Roller Boogie had some foreshadowing because later on in the film, there was roller skating and boogie.
Lots of it. There was some great dance moves in it. So here's the thing. Like I said, I made the comparison to 70s TV. I told my wife a few times while watching this. I said, now, there is no one in their right mind that didn't see this when they were young or even a teenager in the 80s that watched this that would dislike it today. And on the other hand, anybody born after the 80s or in the late 80s that would watch this now, anybody who'd watch this now, it's not for them. It really isn't. It really is more of a nostalgic piece. Because honestly, the thing was that when I was growing up, the roller rink was a massive place to hang out. And the music that they played, especially in the early 80s, was a lot of disco and a lot of dance music. And you had people that were out there roller boogieing. You did, even in the early 80s. And it was where we hung out. Even there were times I went to the roller rink and I didn't even get skates on. I would just hang out on the rail like people do in the movie. So when you see this movie as a kid and you see it repeatedly on cable, it kind of, you know, becomes part of your culture, and you enjoy this stupid hijinks between the main protagonist, all the guys that, you know, phones and all the buddies. It's lighthearted humor. They're doing a switchblade comb and they're going to get his hair, you know, the main character. It's one of those things. It's just lighthearted.
The movie is of its time. The cultural zeitgeist that was roller skating and roller skating rinks and the social aspect of it. My parents took us roller skating when I was little, and this would have been the early 80s.
Yep.
And everybody remembers the name of their local rink. Ours was Thunderbird. Oh yeah. All-Star Skate was across town. My mom, when she did work at our church office, like part-time, would drop me and my brother off at the roller skating rink at 10 and pick us up at 2:30 when she got off of work and hand us $5. And we would spend 4 or 5 hours just roller skating with no parental supervision whatsoever. And you can still find that. But one of those places is still open, Thunderbird, here in, well, where I grew up in Plano, Texas. But anymore, it's kind of like you would take your kids and they would just think it was maybe weird and old-fashioned and interesting, like my grandparents taking me to a soda shop where they jerk sodas or whatever. And so, do you want to see me keep doing this?
Yeah, especially with like Ron Jeremy on the screen.
And when some of those guys would jerk two sodas at the same time and really work them in tandem and parallel. But like, it's just a kitschy thing now. It was not kitschy back in the day. It was fucking fun. And I'm sorry, Greg. I mean, maybe when you started roller skating, it was disco and boogieing. But when I was skating, dude, and they play and they came on and the DJ would spin, "Step inside, walk this way, yeah, you and me, babe." I mean, talk about a mass rush onto the floor, people skating to fucking Def Leppard, "Pour Some Sugar on Me." Like, I remember that big time. And I think the thing about movies like this and the way the culture was at the time is that it was really monolithic at the time. You had big artists like Michael Jackson.
Yep.
You can't, who got that famous without the internet, who got that famous without, things were very singular.
Yeah.
Back then, everything's very fragmented now because you have so many different options of the way you consume media, the way that everyone can be interested in anything they want because you can find that stuff. Like if you're super into building Star Wars Lego sets, that's available to you. And you can find like-minded people on the internet who are also into that. And you guys can join chat rooms. By the same token, if you're a Holocaust denier, it used to be hard to find, yeah, that stuff. You,
yeah,
had to like actively seek out other dipshits. And now you just go on the internet and type in, "I don't believe the Holocaust ever happened." And you have 100,000 guys going, "Me too."
Or that the earth is actually round.
Flat.
Yeah. You know, then if you believe it's flat, you can find those things. Well, you make a good point about the music. This roller boogie craze, which was a craze, it happened for a very short period of time. Like a lot of, it's like swing dancing in the 90s when it came back, lasted for, yeah, about a year. And so, yeah, that's what this was. And the music changed because disco went away, but disco was around until like 81, 82. So this movie was, you know, was kind of a craze type thing. In fact, here's the thing about this movie that you may not know. It was made on a $1.5 million budget. Now that's even a lot in 1979. It made nearly $14 million at the box office.
God damn.
It was a financial success. It was coming off of the heels of Saturday Night Fever. And that's all they wanted was give us Saturday Night Fever on roller skates. That's where they were headed with it. Get us Linda Blair. We got a big name. You know, The Exorcist. She was trying to break free from the Exorcist kind of stigma that she had that was following her career around. So start doing teen movies, doing things that are you know, fun, you know, and easy and light. In fact, they were supposed to do a sequel that did so well called Roller Boogie Acapulco.
Oh, nice.
And I'm very sad that it never got around to it because the roller boogie fad, before they could start filming, it was gone.
That's the problem with and fads, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like
My Beanie Babies movie script probably never will see the light of day because
it's gone.
You remember that these people would be like getting divorced and have all of their Beanie Babies like on the courtroom floor with attorneys and like notepads and judges just sitting there going like, I went to 4 years of undergrad and 3 years of law school to watch these fucking knuckleheads separate Beanie Babies during a divorce proceeding.
Yeah, then their kids are over in the corner crying.
Yeah, and like, hey, fighting. Can y'all hush?
They're fighting.
Mommy's trying to get their fucking Beanie Babies.
They're Princess Diana.
For your college.
They're Princess Diana limited edition. She needs that back. But no, it's fads come and go, and roller boogieing was a fad for sure. And but when I was growing up watching this movie, and so it's one of those things where I don't expect anybody to like it. I watched it back. And my wife was, like I said, she said, does it still hold up? And I said, for me, yes, but not for anybody else. For me, I'm enjoying the hell out of it. I mean, I don't know. Like, when you look at these dance scenes, how can you not enjoy this movie? This is great stuff.
There's nothing look wrong at that. With this movie.
It's so much fun. In fact, it was on the list of the Razzies. You know the Razzies?
Yeah.
The one that they do the worst movies ever made. It was on the list of the 100, I'm not sure where it falls in the list, 100 worst movies that are purely enjoyable.
Okay.
So it's so bad it's good movie, but it's really just a bad movie that isn't. There's Ron Jeremy again. I love that guy. He's great. I've seen him in some of his other films.
The real
films.
Ron Jeremy. Yeah, some of his movies. His later work falls a bit flat, is a little flaccid.
Is it a little flaccid? Yeah.
If I had to nitpick nits on a movie as great as this, if I was gun to my head.
Yeah.
First of all, I was going to ask you if there were plans for a second movie because what the fuck? They just go through all of this pain and strife and learn to roller boogie together and learned that the real treasure was the roller boogieing that they did along the way. Yeah. And then at the end, they just split.
Yeah.
And he holds his trophy up like, well, at least I'll always have this and this thermos.
And this thermos.
And my short shorts.
Yeah.
And that'll be it.
It's he teaches her how to roller skate. She was a novice and he teaches her how to skate and they enter the dance contest. And what do you know? They actually win. But it wasn't just because they were good. It was because their ingenuity and their bravery in the face of danger saved the roller rink from being taken over by an unscrupulous businessman who wanted to turn it into a shopping mall. Roller boogie is saved for another day until the fad went away. And the owner, who could have made millions off the mall deal, ends up having to burn the roller boogie down for insurance money 2 years later when everybody stopped coming to the roller rink. That's what we did not see in the movie is after the credits. And the two, she goes off to college and they basically, it splits up. Surprise, surprise ending. Yeah. And I'm sure in the sequel, they would reunite in Acapulco or something. Silly
well,
like
let
that,
me just say this, that Bobby James, by
Jim Bray, yes,
deserved everything that came to him with her leaving to go to Juilliard or whatever. I have never seen a motherfucker fumble the bag so fucking hard as Terry, played by Linda Blair, throwing herself all over this guy
that's funny,
on the beach. And all he can do is think of literally the worst thing you could possibly say to a woman while she's trying to get after you. I wouldn't even know what that was like. And this guy can sit there and just be like, oh, I just thought you were a high-class whore or something. Like,
he does
what?
Say something like that. He does.
That can't be it.
Yeah.
Bobby, think for 1 second, like, you're 30 seconds away from getting laid. Don't say, I just thought you were a whore. Are you going to pay me money for this? Like, what?
He does say that. It's brilliant.
No.
That's what a woman wants to hear when she offers to pay him money for skating lessons, and then she's all over him, and he's, are you going to pay me for this, too? But here's the thing.
fucking guy.
Here's the thing, though. It's Linda Blair, for crying out loud. Mm. And I'm sure in his mind, he's like, this has got to be rigged. This has got to be fake. This can't be real. She's going to cry rape any minute now.
Why are you laughing at that, Greg? That's not funny. And I know that between the two of us, I'm the only one on this show who's ever had the courage to come out against rape. And there you are, just Chuckles McGee over there about it.
When a man is raped, it's funny, is it? I don't know. It just depends on who's doing the raping, I guess.
I mean,
in prison, maybe not as funny. By Linda Blair, it's hilarious. Because she basically rapes him on the beach and then he ends up shoving her off. So yeah, he does
crying,
fumble the bag.
Crying.
He whines about it pretty hard, yeah.
Well, I wish I knew what he said. Like, are you sure you want to do that? Like, don't ask her that.
Well, that's the thing. He doesn't. Well,
any chance that a woman has to reconsider having sex with you, they will. And then they'll go, you know what? I was feeling a little horny, but now that I think about it, you're right. This would be a terrible idea.
Right.
Don't give them the chance to think through that. Get to it.
It's true.
Get to it quick and get through it quick.
But I think
so they don't have it.
It's before they don't have a what? Can't get it out.
Anyway, he deserves
you going to say? You can't.
Right, I wasn't going to say anything. Oh, okay. You just want to get it over quick so that they don't have a chance to orgasm.
Oh. Okay. it does work out that way for you. I imagine
the Bobby James
the method Bobby James method.
Yeah.
So yeah, but the thing is, she's like so hot and cold. I think he's kind of thrown for a loop. And the fact is that her parents went away without telling her, so she's just looking to kind of get even with them by slumming with this guy. So, but that's the thing in our day, if somebody was looking to get with you just because they were getting in with their parents, you didn't question it.
Yeah, I'd be like, yeah, your mom and dad are kind of a bitch.
Yeah, exactly. You start feeding them more stuff.
We should come over. You should come over and we should fuck about this.
We should. In their bed.
Yeah.
And film it.
We'll show them.
Oh, that's good.
What was your name again?
Let's look at a clip from that I really love for this movie. When I rewatched it, I actually listened to this clip. This is Linda Blair. She's the rich kid. She is spoiled, really. She's a musical prod. They keep calling her a musical genius, which I absolutely love.
Flautist.
On the flout. She plays the flout. My daughter plays the flout. She plays the flout really well. So her mother, this is one of the things I really love about this film, is that if you really sit and pay attention, there's a lot of things where the script is kind of simple dialogue, and then they do something that absolutely is kind of above board and mind-blowing as far as funny. And this scene, to me, when you pick it apart and you listen to it, I just have to think these scriptwriters were having fun with these dialogues and with this line. So this is Linda Blair on the stairs as her mother comes down to see if she's okay. This is absolutely great. I love this. You love me.
What a question to ask. What about Daddy? Lovey, where is all this going?
At the end of summer, I go to school. When I come back, I'll be a woman.
Yes, but
I never had a chance to be young.
I love it.
You are different. I mean, even your father doesn't understand how you do those things with music.
So what? I'm a musical genius. What a drag. What a bummer.
Bummer? Lovey, you're giving your mother a migraine.
Look at this. Watch this. This is, look at her. She's taking all her pills out of her purse.
Quaaludes.
Yep.
Diuretics.
Diuretic? Quaaludes. Valium. Oh, there it is.
If I'm old enough to be on my own, then I'm old enough to make my own decisions. I do not want to play the flute.
I love it.
I do not want to go to Juilliard.
Why don't you take the pill with the milk? No, and then her face.
Jackass. And I never want to be another
person in my life. It's awesome. So like I said, there's so many moments. And then she puts all the pills back in her purse. Those are the type of things that this movie does that I really enjoy. It's a cheesy movie from the 70s for sure. But it has these little moments that are just...
I want to win a roller boogie contest. contest down the beach.
What a roller boogie contest down at the beach.
Boogie?
It's like she's like she told her mom she was gay or something. What? And then she, the scene goes on where the mother just keeps looking at her. She walks, slowly walks out the door like a roller boogie contest for real.
Oh, well, it, that was only going to last long enough for Bobby James to get into the roller Olympics, apparently.
Yes.
Because what event are you signing up for?
I can't remember if they had roller skating in the Olympics back then.
It's never been in the Olympics.
Okay, well, we'd have to Google it. I'm not sure. Now, I did know that the guy who played Bobby James, I don't know if you looked this up, but there's the scene where he does the skating around the empty rink where he's rehearsing, and it's almost like he's a figure skater. He is by far
the worst part of the movie.
Come on now. He's a really good skater. He does like triple axels and stuff. And it's really Jim Bray, the actor who plays Bobby. It's really Jim Bray.
I couldn't figure out this. It got away from me a little bit, Greg.
Okay, yeah.
Because Jammer.
Yes.
The owner of
Very good. You remember. See? Nice.
Got the fucking IMDb thing pulled up like I'm looking right at it.
See, I thought you remembered the movie. Damn.
Jammer Delaney, yes. Played by the late, great Sean McClory.
Yes.
He passed out in the booth. Some undisclosed period of time passes.
Yes.
They go back. He's still there.
Yeah.
And Bobby James, in his infinite wisdom, after basically having all but full insertion in a sexual sense and messes that up, decides he'll go over there and he'll do a roller skating routine.
Practicing.
And that'll lighten the mood.
He's practicing for the Olympics.
Jammer will
he's
come to.
He's got to practice for the Olympics. He's got a future.
What if it was like these are unrelated things. Like you're going to the Olympics, but it was for like judo or something. We just don't know. That's just not ever explained.
That could be it.
Yeah. At all.
He was really a power lifter.
Yeah. So
yeah, could have been.
If I had to pick one thing from this movie to nitpick at.
Okay.
In an otherwise flawless film.
All right. Yeah.
Basically.
I agree.
I mean, there's nothing. It's so good.
I appreciate that.
I didn't have any problem with this movie. I mean, it. Listen, we're about to watch a movie that I picked that takes itself about as seriously as this does.
Right.
It's not meant to be high art, and it's not meant to go into the Library of Congress National Archive. Now, I'm not saying that it shouldn't. I don't want you to think for a second that I think it shouldn't be there. But I'm saying it probably wasn't made with the intention of that. You said it yourself.
Right.
It's a fad film. We're trying to, you know, Nintendo puts out the Wizard or whatever it was to sell a bunch of Nintendo Power Gloves.
Yeah, the Power Glove. Yeah, I remember that.
You know, these things happen. And
yes.
That's totally fine. Was there a movie about Pogs? I bet there was. I don't know. But it's fine for exactly what it is. It is really good. I think it really does bother me because on a scale from 1 to 10, and this thing on IMDb clocks in at a 4.7 out of 10. There.
That's perfect.
As a movie, compared to every other movie that's ever been made, maybe that's true. But when you take into consideration what the movie is trying to do, we watched a bunch of movies that took themselves way too seriously and did think that they were high drama and think that they were high art, and they were fucking terrible. I'm looking at you, Battlefield Earth.
Yeah, I agree.
And so I think that there's something to be said about, yeah, okay, it's a 4.7 compared to every movie that was ever made, if we want to look at it that way. But, like, this, you should get some points for making something that you know is schlocky for the sake of it being schlocky.
Yeah.
There's a reason Nickelback got famous, right? Yeah. It's, and I'm not one of those Nickelback bashers.
Yeah, me either.
But you play to the lowest common denominator.
Right.
There's a reason why Nickelback sells all that and Thelonious Monk has sold, you know, one millionth of the number of albums as Nickelback.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
Because the lowest common denominator is accessible. Like this movie, when it came out, was very of its time, was part of an already existing cultural phenomenon. And so put those movies out into the world. We've got enough being John Malkovich's exactly. and high brow think pieces. Let the people watch movies about roller skating or any other dumb thing, as long as you don't think you're making something super serious.
Yeah. And that was clearly what they were trying to do here. It was a take on, they were looking to make money off of Saturday Night Fever had come out. In fact, they were trying to get, this is hilarious, they were trying to get John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John in the two lead roles. To
learn the roller skate.
Like they could land them for like a sequel to Saturday Night Fever or to Grease, but on roller skates, and that wasn't going to happen. So, but yeah, so it is, it doesn't take itself seriously, and that's one of the reasons I love it. It is, those moments, those comedy moments are great. The pool scene where they crash the rich. We've seen that in other films where the lower class crashes the rich white people's party and they destroy everything, create a food fight. But it still works, and it makes me laugh. I have a clip from that. But I'm not going to show it because we've got to get into the other film. I did want to say one more thing about Jim Bray, who played Bobby James and did this routine. Yeah, that whole routine is just so he could show off that he could really skate. And he was, this is the only film he was ever in. He never did any movie. He came in to be the stunt double for Bobby James's, the guy who was going to play Bobby James.
Michael J. Fox.
And they couldn't find a Bobby James. Michael J. Fox or John Travolta, who knows? But they couldn't find one that they were happy with. And so they screen tested him to see, and he doesn't act that great. He's not a professional actor. He was a stunt double. And so he gets to do this movie. And as a result, he did all his own stunts, all his own skating, which is kind of cool. And he did the whole scene. They gave him the scene where he could kind of show off and do the routine. I think that's kind of cool. He did. I looked him up. He won like 175 skating tournaments over a 10-year period. This guy was a class A California skater in every way. He was a Venice Beach god. And I just enjoy the movie. You see why it's a guilty pleasure. I don't go into work and brag about this movie. I don't show it to people and say, oh,
you know, say,
because I know that people are going to look at this and go, this is a dumb ass movie, but I don't look at it that way. I get a lot of enjoyment out of it. And a lot of other people do as well. You go in, what's funny is I was reading the reviews on IMDb to my wife, and it's like one review would be, this is a complete pile of crap. And you could tell they were a younger generation, and then you'd see a 10 out of 10 and people going, this brings me back to my childhood, this is a great film. And that's kind of, that's why it's a 4.7. it's right in the middle, because there are people of my generation that really love it, and then the older, you know, the younger generation doesn't really care for it that much. So before we move on to the other film, because I think we've said enough about Roller Boogie, we know how great it is, and I don't think any more needs to be said about how awesome the film is. Mike Florida asked a question, did I Roller Boogie? Well, I did play ice hockey when I was younger, so I did roller skate as well. And yes, when I was 18, I roller boogied up until the point where Def Leppard was playing over the speakers, and then you just skated aggressively to hair metal as you went around. And it still was, roller skating was a great place to hang out in the 80s. Still, I don't do it anymore. I think if I went up to the roller rink down here, down my street, and I showed up, I might be ushered out because of, you know, my age, and there's a lot of young people there, and
that's what happened to my Uncle Lonnie. That's how they finally caught him, because no one believed me when I told. The skating rink was great.
Yes,
because you got a workout.
You did.
You got a giant pickle.
Okay, from Uncle Lonnie. Okay.
And you put your shoes in a cubby and knew that, yes, they were going to be there when you got done. Where I went to skate at Thunderbird or even at All-Star Skate, your price of admission got you a pair of brown boot skates with orange wheels on them, you could at the time pay one extra dollar and get speed skates, my man.
Mm.
And they were black and white and they weren't high boots. Yeah. And they were hot shit. And I won, Greg, a couple of races with some fools who tried to front. And you know how the whole world is filled with fucking haters.
Mm-hmm.
And I had my fair share back in the day.
I bet you did. Because
here I am just minding my own business, you know, trying to blame it on the rain as I was, you know.
That was falling.
Skating through there, you know, doing my step overs as I'm turning. And then like somebody wants to hate.
Yep.
And sadly, Greg, the only thing I know in a situation like that is violence. Violently skating around as fast as I could and showing them.
As the tears roll down your face.
Yeah. And I'm like, not today. Not today, you bitches. Because I'm skating fast.
Fast
as fuck. Blame it on the
rain as the tears are falling. They're chasing you.
Yeah, but I wasn't having it. Too fast in my speed skates that I paid $1 for. So
nice. Well, that's right. That's why you got the speed skates, so that you could make sure that you got away from those guys.
That's right.
A-holes. Well, that's it for Roller Boogie. So let's move into the movie it is up against this week. And this is also a guilty pleasure of mine, and I'll explain why. The movie is Pop Star Never Stop, Never Stopping. It is with Andy Samberg and Jorma Taccone and Akiva Schaffer, who are known collectively as The Lonely Island. The thing is, with The Lonely Island, they were on SNL. They started out on Saturday Night Live doing these shorts, these music videos, and they kind of took off, really kind of went viral on YouTube. That was where they would show them on Saturday Night Live, then they'd hit YouTube, and then the youth kind of gravitated to it, and these things just went crazy. But for,
and if you're still thinking to yourself, that sounds familiar, but what's he talking about? The Natalie Portman, yes, Lazy Sunday, the Dick in the Box, the on a boat.
Yep.
The Michael Bolton, Captain Jack Sparrow thing. Yep. I Just Had Sex.
Yeah.
There's Happy Birthday to the Ground or whatever. I mean, these guys, they took what Robert Schmeigel was doing with those digital shorts back in the day. And honestly, I think perfected what that short form like could be.
Yeah.
From a like humor and production standpoint. So if you're sitting there going, it seems like Lonely Island, something I've heard of. Yeah. These three guys are it.
Yeah. And so it's one of those things, like if you like them and you're into them, you get it. The songs that they have appeal to people with kind of a offbeat sense of humor. They're like Jack Sparrow to the average person. And when I say average, I mean a lot of, or middle-aged or above, that don't watch Saturday Night Live in the 70s with the original cast or with the Eddie Murphy cast, and they don't necessarily find a song about Michael Bolton singing about the Pirates of the Caribbean movies to be funny. But to somebody like me, who grew up with Michael Bolton being this untouchable R&B singer, it is hilarious because he can't get his mind off of it. And the Lonely Island themselves are parodying the whole thing about them in the shorts, is they're parroting the music industry. They're pretending to be these great rappers, but what they're doing is coming up with these kind of Weird Al Yankovic type songs. They're not really song parodies, but they're in that same vein. Like,
if you like parodies,
I walked right into this one. I saw your eyes light up as soon as I said parody.
So let me set the coffee cup down.
Just go ahead.
Cool as a cucumber.
Yep. Let me have it.
Well, if you like parodies.
I do like parodies.
Maybe you'd like a parodies nuts.
There you go. Thank you. And there it is.
All right. Our first, appreciate you indulging me.
We've had our D's joke, D's nuts joke for this week, and that's good. We can move on. But yeah, this movie is kind of a culmination of their music, and they kind of do this whole mockumentary style, a la Spinal Tap type thing, where they chronicle the life of their group known as the Style Boys, which are it's hilarious. Yeah. And so they talk about themselves, and they're kind of like this Beastie Boy-esque group. And when I say that, looking over some of the making of and looking at the special features, they have all of these celebrities, these musicians that are in the film that talk about the Style Boys and how much they love them and how much they mean to them. And I didn't know, and I did not realize this, that when Jorma Taccone and Akiva Schaffer directed the film, were doing these interviews with like Nas and Questlove and people like that, they were asking them questions about how they felt about the Beastie Boys, not about the Style Boys. So these guys are genuinely sincere going, man, I grew up on those guys, man. And I did not realize they did that to them. To elicit the reaction. There's a lot of creative stuff in this parody. The whole Style Boys opening is just really, it's so constructed so well, where they don't take up a lot of time, but when they go through their entire career in like the matter of like 5 minutes, and it's hilarious. And by the end of it, you realize why they broke up, the whole fight on stage, reminiscent of the Eagles, Don Felder and Don Henley fighting. It's great stuff. Great stuff.
This movie had been on for all of about 4 minutes, Greg, when I laughed for probably the 15th time. I mean, it started and I was laughing and I didn't stop laughing until the end of this thing. Oh, and yeah. I wish, and I was kind of like taking a mental list of, you know, I'll tell you the things that I was laughing at. I had to stop because I was laughing at everything. Yeah. I think Andy Samberg is underrated on his time on SNL. Agreed. He did come into his own with Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and I think his work with Lonely Island is really good. I think Akiva Schaffer is probably the most talented of those guys. He plays kind of the smallest role in the movie.
Yeah.
And I think Jorma Taccone is great too, or Taccone, or
yeah.
Hey, it's a me.
It's a Jorma Taccone.
Taccone.
Yeah, exactly. They put together a film that is filled with one-liners, and they parody kind of parody's nuts. They parody Justin Bieber a lot. Because his film was Never Say Never, and this is Never Stopping. So you know it's there, but they're also just taking the piss out on the entire music industry.
Dude, the thing they did with TMZ.
Oh, yeah.
I was crying because it was spot fucking on. Yeah. I don't watch TMZ. I mean, I haven't in a long time. But I remember the mannerisms of whoever that lead guy is.
Oh, yeah.
Always with the big hanging over with his water. And just the way that they, you know, one person will say something and then he'll repeat it and they'll all laugh.
Oh yeah.
And I mean, that had me fucking dying.
His bug keeps getting bigger and then he ends up like having two of them taped together by the end. It's so good. But yeah, I think one of the other things is the TMZ stuff is great. The actual music itself, The opening song, I'm So Humble. I'm trying to tell people who, again, you got to listen to the lyrics. The lyrics itself, there's so many jokes in there. You know, it's just the fact
that... And then they interview Mariah Carey, who says that she's probably the most humble person she knows.
She so identifies with that song. But
one I identified with that I could not stop laughing at, because it shows up, I think, three times. And the first time sent me was the Mona Lisa's a piece of shit.
You're overrated. Yeah, Mona Lisa, you're an overrated piece of shit. You look like a garbage pail kid.
Like, I think the comedic sensibility that it takes to take something that flat and turn it into that funny of a fucking joke.
Yeah.
Then into a song, into producing that song. Like, man, I was fucking dying. There, and like Mike is in the chat saying, well, I love the F Bin Laden.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that had me too. Just like crying. Yeah. I had never seen this. I like Lonely Island. I probably wanted to see this and just never got around to it.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you chose this, not just for your side of the bracket, but just I enjoy definitely having a chance to revisit movies that I, you know, maybe had missed over. I mean, I didn't stop laughing. It's dumb. I mean, this movie's dumb as fuck.
Yeah, it is.
But it's dumb as fuck.
Yeah.
In that way that the Lonely Island do better than almost anybody, right? Yeah. I mean, maybe some, you know, people who are super into sketch comedy will say, well, there's these guys from Albuquerque who are really cutting edge, whatever. I'm not talking about that.
Yeah, yeah.
It always feels like they have a heart. Like, when I watch Andy Samberg, it's silly and it can be over the top.
Right.
But it's always grounded in humanity.
Right.
And in having, and we've talked about that before, like, you can be funny and you can say outrageous, controversial things.
Right.
As long as you're not punching down, you know, you're good. Really. I mean, in my estimation, if you're not punching down, you're good. Make that fucking joke.
Yeah. And it's more, their humor is very self-deprecating. There's so many great moments. So you bring up, first of all, you bring up Akiva Schaffer and you bring up kind of the heart. And the movie really revolves around the fact that these three best friends formed this group. It became too big for them. And it happens a lot. The kind of the cute one, or, you know, like One Direction or whatever, you know, that goes off and goes solo and breaks up the group. And then the remaining members kind of pick up the pieces a la Justin Timberlake. And then occasionally they'll come back and all that. And so, but these guys were like super close. And there's so many great moments of them, you know, the one Owen, who is Jorma Taccone, trying to get them back together using the Parent Trap, which is hilarious. But there's a scene in there that when they show Lawrence, who's played Akiva Schaffer's character, when they show him what he's up to, and he's doing the woodworking, it's one of my favorite scenes, just the way he delivers his lines. So I'm just going to bring that up. This was just brilliant.
This is all my woodwork. It's kind of my passion, my hobby. This is a nice piece called Government in Crisis.
Government in
for
Crisis.
Obvious reasons.
Obvious reasons.
Still me.
Still me.
It's a hat. You know, we were going places as a band. We had plans as a band. Style Boys, that's three guys, not two. It doesn't work with two. You know, it's like a tricycle. You take away one of the wheels, what do you got? Nothing. A bicycle. Don't use that.
So it's so good. That's one of my favorite moments. Where every
when
time
he's trying to get them back together and they're in a limo and they do that stereotypical tits up against the glass.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
like, I've been signing titties. And he's like, but you've been signing titties off of work I did. And then.
Yeah.
And then. The titties go away, and it's just a dick smashed up against a dick. And, like, dicks are already gross and, like, flattened up against the glass, and he looks over, and it's just a flat fucking floppy weenie. And he throws it down!
Of course, we cannot show that here on YouTube, but I got the image up. I think Eric has completely lost it. Oh my goodness.
It flops over the window. Grab it so he can suck it.
Yep. And his wife is right there. You're reliving it. Oh my goodness.
Oh Jesus.
Now here's a fun fact. Do you know whose dick that was?
No.
It was Judd Apatow. It was Judd Apatow's dick. He volunteered to do that. He had Jason Segel do it in Forgetting Sarah Marshall, and he was challenged by people within the group for him to do it himself. And he took up the challenge. You know, you don't see his face, but it was Judd Apatow's dick. And yeah, the whole scene with his wife asking him to sign. It's so we were watching that at the house over the weekend, you know, the day after my birthday, I think it was. And then it was just, maybe it would have been on my birthday. I think we watched it that night. And that scene came up. And yeah, even if we weren't really watching the movie, that scene comes up and just everybody, not just to transfixed by the dick, it's just the idea of it. And then he gets the sanitizer. He can't put enough sanitizer on his hands. It's great. I think one of the things that I laughed the hardest at when I saw it in the theater with my middle child, my son, and he was really big into Lonely Island, and we were like excited that this was coming out. We were like waiting for it, and we go in, and it's another reason it's a guilty pleasure of mine. We're the only two people in the theater on the opening weekend, and that just kind of shows you that this humor isn't for everybody. Not everybody dials into it, even though to us, it's extremely funny. But if I bring this up to people at work, nobody has a clue what this is. But as we're watching this film, because that we were the only two in the theater, we could laugh as loud as we wanted to, and no one could stop us. And then this, I'm going to play it down a little bit just because there's music involved, and I don't want to get copyright blocked again. Thank you, Facebook. Thank you. But this moment here that they have in...
What's up, y'all?
When he does the not gay song.
Social issues that I think are being ignored. So keep your eyes peeled for that. We're going to be surprised releasing it next Thursday at noon.
They're going to be surprised releasing it next Friday at noon. But one of the best parts is the fact that he has to constantly say he's not gay. And this is like a take on Macklemore when he did the One Love song.
Yeah.
It comes off very douchey, where it's kind of like, you guys can love any way you want. Not me, though.
Not me.
Not me. I'm not gay.
Personally, I'm kind of icked out by it. If you're not, if you could find a way in your mind to do that to another dude, you go for it. Yeah, it's like the weirdest.
It's, and then he gets Pink involved in it. Pink comes into the song. But he has to keep saying, you're gay. I'm not gay. I'm not gay. I'm not gay. Then he has to keep saying all of these.
And then it's like fireworks. Buffalo wings. Ford F-150s.
Lying in bed next to all straight women. Oh, it's great. Hot wings. Predator. One love.
Karate.
Nunchucks. Love beef. Oh, it's great. Harvey Milk, Sean Penn. And it just keeps running through every... Leonard Skinner runs through every Dexter. It's so good. To me, when we saw this in the movie theater, I was laughing so hard because it's that hypocritical, you know, pop, yeah, musician who they feel they have to do this message song, but it comes off so sincere. It's kind of like Kylie Jenner did the whole Pepsi thing in the middle of the riots or whatever. It's like, dude, yeah, you are so tone deaf to what's really going on in the world that we think Kylie Jenner needs to hand somebody a Pepsi so that we can all get along.
When COVID was first hot and heavy and Ellen DeGeneres, you know, like,
oh yeah,
what did she say? Like, this has been really hard on me or whatever, as she walks around her 25,000 square foot mansion without a worry in the world. I mean it's got the big moments like dick pressed up against a window, and the music videos and a lot of those are like intentionally kind of shocking, invoking Bin Laden and stuff like that. There's also, just like in the clip you just showed, where he says, we're going to be surprised releasing that next Thursday at noon. Little things like when they meet Maya Rudolph's character and says, Deborah. And he goes, oh, that's interesting. Where's that from? And she goes, probably from Deborah. Like, it just, it's so, it runs the gamut of understated humor, really overstated humor, everything in between.
But the best part about that is the Deborah stuff is hilarious. The fact that they put his music into all the toasters and the refrigerators, it's similar to the U2 music album that they dropped on everybody's iPhones and drove everybody insane. But what I love is what she says after that, when the guy drops the N-word and then she throws it back with a hard R.
Yeah, goes, oh, you went hard R there, huh? Okay.
The way she says it, it is, it just kills me. Of course, she could say it, but you know. But it's still funny. And this picture of that scene is one of my favorite parts of the entire film as well. And that's Tim Meadows, who plays their manager from like day one, Harry. Tim Meadows is, to me, one of those character actors. You know, he was on Saturday Night Live for a very long time until Kenan Thompson kind of broke his record. But he was on there for a long time. And he was always solid. The reason he's had longevity on Saturday Night Live is because he was solid. And then he's done these things where he just has these great delivery of lines. He's almost like a straight man that delivers super funny lines, and you just, they hit you very quickly. Like when he says to them, I got some news for, bad news for you, but you are going to like it. He goes, did you say are or aren't? Are. It's like, wait a minute. But I got a clip of his that I really enjoy. It's just a really quick one of Harry and him talking about his previous life before he became the manager of the Style Boys. I love this quick scene.
Well, Connor currently has 32 people on his personal payroll. He has a personal assistant, a party coordinator, an ab trainer, basketball coach, an eyebrow specialist, sneaker jockey, two umbrella wranglers, a weed roller, a weed holder, a turtle sitter for Maximus, scarf caddy, a guy who punches him in the nuts so that he remembers where he came from, a perspective manipulator. Oh, that's a guy who's slightly shorter than Connor, who he pays to stand near him at events to make him look taller.
It's so good.
You know, back in my high school days, I was in a band. You may have heard of him called Tony. We broke up over
Tony
differences. Each Tony had an exclamation point after their name, and I thought my name should have a question mark. So it would be Tony. In hindsight, it was not my best decision, but that led me to Connor, so... Who's laughing now?
It's like, in hindsight, that wasn't my best decision. But the Tony. That's what makes Tim Meadows. And he, like I said, the parts he's in this film, he steals them. The moments he's in. So he's great.
I could spend, I mean, just, he loses his fiance to Seal.
He gets attacked by wolves.
Party rental wolves that turn out to not be a good idea.
Yeah.
Like the whole thing
is,
I never stopped laughing.
And then you got Hunter the Hungry who comes in. We didn't really talk about him. The guy that's kind of based on Tyler, the Creator, Hunter the Hungry. And this guy is just... keeps pulling the pranks on him, pulls the prank on him where he's doing the quick change and he ends up completely naked on stage. The best part is the scene where he's like, maybe I did. Maybe I did do it. No, I didn't do it, but maybe I did. It's great stuff. It is. There's so many things. There's so much to like about it, but it, to me, it's a guilty pleasure because of what it is. It's just not in the mainstream. You have to be kind of on the fringe to get it. And I've never really been like, I can talk about it with you because you like The Lonely Island, but that's how you have to kind of broach the subject. You have to talk to people and go, cause they're out there. I saw The Lonely Island live a few years ago and it was amazing in Detroit and the Fox Theater. And Tim Meadows opened and did stand-up. It was a great night. And they did all, like, live recreations of their music videos. And there was tons of people there. And I think it was every Lonely Island fan was in that building. Because I will bring them up and people will just give me that blank stare. And then you can mention Andy Samberg and they go, oh, yeah, I know who that is.
Yeah.
I've seen That's My Boy. it's like, okay, what about Hot Rod? And then again, Hot Rod was almost the choice here. It was either going to be this or that or Popstar. You mentioned Hot Rod, and again, it's like the blank stares. People just blink at you like they don't know what's going on. And that's an amazing film. And so, yeah, it's a guilty pleasure for me because of its just not, it's not, its place in the mainstream is not there, which I'm fine with. Because sometimes that ruins things when you have it outside the mainstream. So,
well, I obviously, from my viewpoint and the way that I am framing the idea of a guilty pleasure movie, this one works so well for my, you know, own internally made up definition of this. Because if I'm doing laundry and I set the laundry basket down on my couch and I start scrolling through the channels to find just something to put on while I do this, Popstar, I would be so happy to see Popstar up there and turn that on. And I would watch it no matter where in the movie I started. Could only be 30 minutes left. I will watch the last 30 minutes while I'm doing the laundry. Those are the types of movies. This is exactly one of those. It's not important that you always watch it from beginning to end. It'd be great to watch it beginning to end your first time. But every time after that, no matter where you start, you're going to laugh your ass. I mean, I did. I think Mike brought up a good point. It's like maybe some people find it to be too much or cringy or any of the other things. That's the risk you take in doing kind of gonzo comedy that's not, you know, like my dad wouldn't find this funny, but my dad would sure find funny a 15-minute monologue about airline food, right? Like we haven't done that. Comedians haven't been doing that for 30 years, this observational humor of, you know, what's funny is every time I go to the supermarket and I see some, Jesus, that is great, but people don't do that anymore.
No.
Successfully. You know, I think when you become willing to just go for it and be weird. A lot of this is weird, but I think if you embrace the weirdness of yourself, then you can find weird comedy funny. Right. You don't have to take it so seriously. I have enough going on in life with obligations and responsibilities, and you do too, Greg, to where sitting back for an hour and however long this movie, this hour and 27 minutes.
Yeah,
I mean, it happens quick.
Yep.
I'd have watched another hour of this.
Oh yeah, for sure.
If they had a, you know, director's cut or, you know, whatever.
Yep. I'm there.
Because it's a story that really probably is about an hour and 27 minutes long, crammed on top, on bottom, all around with some of the funniest one-liners, over-the-top musical numbers, characters, just everything.
Yeah.
All around it. You know, the story's still the story, and it's just, it's piled on there. I mean, this has a 6.7 out of 10 on IMDb, which is probably higher than I would have expected.
True.
After having watched it, knowing who it was, knowing that there must have been some marketing behind it, because I remember being aware of this movie when it came out and wanting to see it, even though I didn't. And I don't see any movies, so that's not a knock on this one specifically. But it's almost a 7. I mean, that's, for this type of movie, that's really good. I am happy to see it that high. I mean, 6.7 for some films might be considered a disappointment. I think for this one, that's great. I'm happy for that.
What's interesting about the film, and I think that the rating is probably about 7 works for me. I think 7 out of 10 is where I think it should be, because again, it's not for everyone. But what's interesting is if somebody may not like the entire film, but they will find moments that they do laugh. Like when the movie starts, my wife's kind of interest level was, oh, okay, that's kind of cute. The baby playing drums. Oh, the song with Adam Levine. Oh, that's really good. Oh, now they're doing the Style Boys, and now they're singing the song where they're just cursing every other word in the club. Then, okay, nah, I'm not. That's not as funny to me. And then there's some gross out humor. But then they introduced Maximus the Turtle. And then, so there's throughout, there's those clips, the not gay song, I want to kick it, I'm a karate guy, where it's silly, but it's not so much like vulgar humor that people can still find a laugh out of it. When he's trying to get out of his, when Maximus is dying and he's trying to get him out of the, and he's puking in his lap. There's little things that the movie just does well that even if you don't like it as a whole, you could pick it up anywhere, because it's not one of those things where you have to see the entire story. These are just little clips like a mockumentary that just does it really well telling the story. It's probably, if we were to do a category of box office battles of mockumentaries like This Is Spinal Tap, this one would be right up there with the Christopher Guest mockumentaries. Dude, that he's done.
You brought up Spinal Tap. It is sacrilege to say it, because that is so ingrained in...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Christopher Guest is really good at that style of movie.
Without a doubt.
Very groundbreaking, and Spinal Tap was one of the first to do it that way. This movie is funnier than Spinal Tap.
Ooh.
Spinal Tap will hold up because the cast is talented, because it was the kind of first of its kind, or the first in the public conscience anyway of its kind. But y'all, go back and watch Spinal Tap. There's some slow ass parts to that movie.
There's a few.
There's some humor that doesn't quite hold up. Like, this is fun. I mean, you can't, nobody can say a movie is funnier than the other except for what you personally like. But I laughed a lot more in watching Popstar the other night than I did the last time I watched Spinal Tap. I like Spinal Tap. This goes to 11, and all of the things are funny. There's a cluelessness that they have in common, that this band is so kind of up their own ass they don't recognize the world around them is changing, especially in Spinal Tap. The world around them is changing.
Yeah.
They're not part of it. In this one, whatever. There's always someone, a hunter they use for thee. There's always someone hungry, waiting to take your place and move up, and all of a sudden you're working at a Lowe's or whatever.
Yeah, so I'm with you. I really love Spinal Tap. It is one of my favorites. I will say one thing about Spinal Tap that I really loved when I got it. On the DVD, the DVD opening, before you even start the movie, it's just a black screen, and you can hear
so black.
Yeah, and you hear Spinal Tap talking, and then all of a sudden the menu comes up and they start going over what the menu is, and you hear them arguing, and it was just almost as good as the movie. So they're actually going to be doing a new one, by the way, which I hope is good. It's aging rock stars trying to make a comeback. It's supposed to be a big screen. Rob Reiner's back. So we'll see. But the original, you can't touch it. But when you put that up against Popstar, there is not many moments in Popstar where I don't laugh. I can't think of any that, now again, not everybody I've watched it has found every single part funny, but I do. And so that's why I love it so much, is that I can put this on anytime and I'm going to have a good time. And it's a guilty pleasure, because I don't think that's the same for everybody. I'm glad you and I agree on that. So let's give it to a vote. I'm going to give you the first vote. I think I know you're going to vote for Roller Boogie, so that's cool.
Okay, so what do you say? Now, I mean, I didn't not enjoy, so I guess I could say I did enjoy Roller Boogie for what it was. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
It's formulaic, and it's exactly what you would expect. It's very of its time.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's really fun, watching a Rolls Royce pull up and then have a phone in the
that
console.
That freaking car was badass. What I hear about that car, it was custom made to be a take on the Mercedes SSX, and I want that car. But then I found out it's a box of shit to drive. It's like really hard, but it looks great.
Yeah,
the phone in it, the actual hand receiver.
Yeah,
but anyway,
very refined.
It is very nostalgic. So yeah, Roller Boogie is what it is for the times. But
for the criteria that we have set forth, or that I have set forth in keeping my own voting consistent.
Okay.
Popstar is the winner of this one. Hands down, if I'm scrolling through and Popstar, I mean, this will happen. If I ever see this movie on, I'll be stopping down to watch it.
All right.
Because I could very much and will add this to kind of my list. If we were doing this a year from now, I'd have this on my list of guilty pleasure movies. That's how much I enjoyed this.
Cool.
This one, it's Popstar for me.
All right. So before I do my vote, I am going to reveal the audience vote. Over all our socials, we had almost 30 votes cast. And the winner of the fan vote, by a large margin, like 75 to 25%, was Roller Boogie.
Really?
Yeah, mainly because I put a button to choose where it said Popstar, Roller Boogie, or a third option that said, I haven't seen either of them, but I'm voting Roller Boogie to mess with Eric.
I want the metrics on that one.
That was overwhelmingly the choice on all the socials. So, yeah, so no. So basically, I break the tie.
The tie that you so expertly crafted anyway.
I have rigged it in my favor. So the winner, everyone, is Roller Boogie. So that's great. Roller Boogie moves on. No, the winner will be definitely Popstar, Never Stopping. I had no designs on Roller Boogie getting out of the first round. I did not think it would. But I did glad that I got to share with somebody and to all the public that everybody, the biggest views we've had on YouTube for one episode was one of the David Lynch's that we did. And it was like 170 views. So that's nice that I have now shared this with our YouTube audience and our Twitch audience. And so the vote was rigged. It was rigged on purpose. I won't do that again. But yeah, so yeah, Mike knows because you're not on Facebook, so you couldn't say anything about it. But
no,
I actually was campaigning for Roller Boogie.
That is so funny. Yeah, it's not worth me getting back on Facebook for sure. But,
no, but I decided to have fun with it. So yeah, Popstar moves on the Greg side of the bracket. It'll be fun as these remaining movies come together. So before we go, we'll talk about what our next episode will be. It is back to Eric's bracket. And I know you've been waiting on this one. So it's going to be Tuesday, the 22nd of July. Battle number 3. It will be Moulin Rouge, the number one seed, the highest rated movie on IMDb versus one of Eric's favorite. Dude, Where's
Sweet.
My Car? So that's going to be good, eh?
Dude.
Sweet. Now, Dude, Where's My Car? Covered on Jared Goes to the Movies. I was actually on that episode. So that will be fun to redo that. I need to watch it again because that was before COVID, wasn't it? I can't
Fuck
remember.
If I know.
I can't remember.
I was on that show for a long time.
I know.
Everybody who's not me remembers more about those episodes than I do. But Dude, Where's My Car is going to have a lot in common with Popstar, Never Stopping, in as much as, like, it can be the dumbest shit imaginable.
Yeah.
And it can be fucking funny. So, yeah, this is going to be a tough one because Moulin Rouge isn't fucking funny. There's nothing funny about tuberculosis,
no,
Greg.
There isn't. So, that movie, I don't want to get too much into it, but the movie, that movie is like the meme where anybody just starts going, oh, they're dead.
A little blood comes out. A little out. Blood.
Poor, into the hanky, little blood on the hanky. You know they're dying. They're
poor Satine. She did not deserve that. Well,
I will have fun watching those over the next couple of weeks until 22nd of July on a Tuesday. Be with us on YouTube, Twitch, and Facebook. Also, I want to mention thank you to everyone who viewed our TikToks recently. I put several clips from our previous episode. Keep doing that. We'll have more from this episode on there. And if you're just listening to the podcast and you want to check us out, you can go to YouTube and watch the live stream at Box Office Battle Podcast, or you can go to Twitch if you like that better. Box Office Battle Pod. You can email us at boxofficebattles@gmail.com. Tell us if you've got a suggestion for a category or if we put any of the votes out there, especially if it's against Eric. You can vote for against Eric on our Gmail. So it'll be a lot of fun. So make sure you do all those things. When we say like, subscribe, smash that like and subscribe button. So that being said, we'll see you guys again on the 22nd of July for Moulin Rouge versus Dude, Where's My Car? Eric, anything that you would like to say before we go?
Until 2 weeks from now, you guys be excellent to each other. We'll see y'all then.
We'll see you. Bye.